find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Yeah, hey, this is Peter from Sons of Silver. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Catch it now.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right. Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, the podcast that just keeps on giving. We just keep bringing you episodes that you don't even ask for, but we seem to keep showing up on your podcast app, and today is no different. Hello, Mike.
Scott, I've been thinking. We have been giving a lot. I think we got to start like charging a tax to this audience.
So charging them.
What? Yeah, I mean,
here's the problem. We'd go to like Patreon or like a pay service, and we would get exactly $0 from our audience.
Well, I mean, I think we got to start with something. I mean, come on. I mean, like you said, we keep giving and giving, and
what if we?
Here I am.
What if we put our episodes that we've never released on the Patreon so they get bonus content?
What if we threaten we will put out those episodes unless we get something in return?
We were just talking 2 seconds ago. Some of the episodes that have never aired, one of them was, I think we talked about this on the air, but one of them was a woman who believed she was Marilyn Monroe's incarnate. So she was Marilyn Monroe. And as Mike and I talked to her, she was rambling, and the interview stopped every once in a while, and there was birds constantly chirping in the background. She's like, oh, God, I'm sorry. I got to get to a space where I can't hear my birds. And it was a disaster. It was a disaster.
Yeah. And there was some, like, mystical doctor that was going to improve her situation, but he couldn't join, or she couldn't find him for some reason.
Yes, I forgot about the doctor.
She was trying to beg us, let's have another interview and have him on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We were like, no, we're good. Whatever you say, Miss Monroe, if it'll get you to hang up the phone.
But she was saying, like, her face was scanned by doctors, and it was the exact proportions of Marilyn Monroe and things like that. And
just out of curiosity, what database has that information?
I don't know.
Like, is it something on Google I can find? Like, if
you pay enough money, you could be George Clooney's son. They'll be like, yo, Mike, you look exactly like George Clooney. Which is convenient because he's in your car. He's in your road trip. It could be like a father-son kind of thing.
That's the thing. We could make a whole movie about it. Like, I secretly know that he's my father, and we're just driving along to California with Weird Al Yankovic and John Kruk.
Right.
And we'll have this whole bonding experience. And then, of course, with everybody in there, wackiness will ensue.
Right. Of course. So,
I mean, it would be kind of like a heartwarming thing, but at the same time, kind of like the road trip movie.
Yeah. Now, if anybody thinks Mike's is rambling here, this is from last episode. We talked about what celebrities, athletes, musicians you would take on a road trip with you. And a little refresher, Mike took George Clooney, John Kruk from the Phillies, Weird Al Yankovic, and Charlie Day from Always Sunny, which I got to admit, Mike, was a solid car. I didn't have any arguments with any of your picks. And I took, Shaquille O'Neal riding shotgun. I had Dave Grohl. I had, who did I have? Oh, Norm MacDonald and, President Jimmy Carter riding in my car. So if you guys think we're just like rambling, which usually we are, but there is some context to, what they're saying. What else? We didn't release a episode with a marijuana sponsor that sponsored some NASCAR thing, and he went on like an hour long rant basically trying to get us to like buy his product. That's what it seemed like.
I don't even think he was trying to buy the product. I think he wanted to sound enlightened because right. He was going to like molecular levels, and it wasn't even like an interesting scientific conversation. Like if it was like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm sure he could talk about molecular stuff with marijuana. It would be like, oh, wow, this is deep. It's almost like I'm smoking marijuana listening to his knowledge.
Yeah.
But this guy was just a ramble on. Like, it was like 10 minutes. And this component is 18% of this, unlike this component, which is 33%. That is like, for the love of God, we were trying to.
Yeah. Well, we also didn't release that episode with Neil deGrasse Tyson that we had. He was talking too much.
Well, he wouldn't admit I was smarter than him. That's when I'm like, Scott, I'm putting in the veto.
Yeah. Yep.
We talked to him for 2 hours straight, and I'm like, you know what? Nope. Trash can.
Then we never released an episode with a guy who directed like his interview was filthy, like a killer unicorn movie, but it was all like very, very sexual and kind of gross. And like the interview was just like he was trying to be shocking, and it was kind of just like gross and really didn't fit our kind of what we go for here.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of like stern late 80s, early 90s thing. And it was not gelling. At all. It's just literally, and then the killer is going to do this to the guy, and then he'll be naked, and this will happen.
It wasn't good. Like, it wasn't good.
I don't think I'm going to get it on pay-per-view.
It wasn't on brand, if there was a brand for us, if you're just tuning in, essentially, we try to bring on interesting guests or people who are passionate about different things, actors, musicians, athletes, but then we have the strange, like hippo attack survivors and pogo stick riders and stool banks and you name it. So if you're tuning in, we have a back catalog of about 320 episodes of a lot of fun stuff. And last week, we just had J.J. Burden from the former Kansas City Chief, former Atlantic Falcon on the show. He was really cool, too. So
it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So I guess, Mike, another week we turn on the podcast here. We turn on the recording equipment, and the United States is in perfect harmony, as always.
Yep. we come together. We all, as a country, I mean, we don't put this out in the news for the other countries to steal our ideas, but we literally join hands every morning around 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. and saying we are the world, every person in the United States. And it's really beautiful. I mean, the harmonics are just amazing. Truly everyone loves each other, and we're going to go on for a long time.
So another week of COVID, another week of the DNC and the RNC. And then of course, we are awakened, I guess it was 2 days ago, with another terrible shooting of a black man by police officers. And again, on tape, it looks absolutely horrendous. It looks like another puzzling what happened. I mean, we can only go by I only saw the one view. I heard there's another one out there, but the one view, it looks like the guy's walking away, whether he was armed or not. It looks like he was walking towards his car, gets in the car, police officer shoots him point blank in the back seven times. Apparently he's in ICU. But it just, it very, very hard from that video anyway to figure out why they couldn't tackle the guy. Like, we talked about this with the George Floyd thing. Why did it get to a point where weapons were even drawn when there was like, I don't know, six cops or whatever it was, five cops, like tackle them and handcuff them and you know, detain them and then figure it out. Looking at it, it's nauseating again. It's like it is point blank shots to the back. I haven't read like that much on it. I haven't really dove deep into this one. Like the George Floyd one was, you know, seemed to be a lot of information out on it, but I haven't gone that deep, but I assume you saw this one too, right?
I haven't seen the video. I've heard of the news. Mm-hmm. I've been reading up on it. I do know a lot of people are backlashing that apparently, he's under suspicion of like sexual assault or something like that. Where a lot of like people are leaning on that, which it's a really, I mean, I know we all say the same thing. If you're a rapist or this or that, yes, you deserve blah, blah, blah. But I kind of want the trial where we go, yep, that's what you are. And then we can have our bad thoughts about the guy.
Right, but, right. Isn't that like the whole point? Like we have the justice system, right? The whole point is the police to detain the suspect, and then the justice system is supposed to take it from there, right? The police are kind of there to make the arrest. Most of the time, it's supposed to be unharmed. That's the first goal. And then let the lawyers and the courts and everything else take over. This one, I can't, you know, maybe he is under all that stuff. And maybe he's a terrible guy. I have no idea. But again, it doesn't seem like it's the police's job to murder this man, to bring justice on their with their gun. It's going to be another one that's going to be very hard to convince me that was the necessary force taken. It was point blank, too, like 7 shots right to the back.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder through that cop's head around the second bullet that went in. When did he was like, I need a couple more to feel all right about this situation. I mean, even if not I'm going to support, but if like the cop shot him in the leg and then grabbed him and handcuffed him, yep, then we're in a gray area where, I mean, we'll definitely debate. The cop probably shouldn't have done it, but at the same time, it's like, all right, we're detaining a guy. We think he might have raped somebody. I don't know. There's at least, okay, now I can start thinking on your side. When he's just like emptying a clip and there's no sign of, wow, he was in danger.
Yeah, like it's hard for me to. There really, has to be some other angle where this guy had a gun or something like that in order for this to make any sense. And it's just exactly what this country didn't need again, you know, like it didn't need this. And it's just cooling off a little bit as far as the protests. And when that's just going to awake them to new levels again. And there's going to be the rioting and the looting and the burning and the positive protests and also the negative ones. I mean, you saw a guy last night, a kid, 17 years old. And again, another mixed story. Shot 3 people during the protest, was walking around with an AR-15, was getting beat up by Black Lives Matter guys, and then took it upon himself to shoot people. What the true story there is, I don't know, but it doesn't sound right. And we are only, listen, like, our reaction, everybody's like, oh, you know, they take sides automatically. It's very hard for me to take sides, because we're being fed this story through the funnel of the media, you know, it's not like, here's a video, educate yourselves on it. You're being spun a story, and what do you believe, you know? But on paper, it seems pretty terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard rumors the gun was illegal. I haven't read enough to say yes or no. And on top of it, it's like the guy who shot up people was calmly arrested, given water, and taken in safely to the police station. It's one of those, okay, then there's clearly a situation where immediately cops are seen getting triggered by somebody of a race and just automatically assume there's a confrontation. And
yeah, I don't know, man.
I don't know how you train people like that. If their first thought is, I see this, I'm scared. I see that, I'm pretty cool.
Yeah, like if we were like a radio show in a studio right now or something like this, this is again where I would call Tom Verney up. Our friend Tom Verney, because we've done a lot of cool podcasts this year. And he was really interesting because we called him. If you go back, I don't know, a couple of months ago, we had him back on. And Tom Verney is a former NYPD officer, but is also very critical of the cops, but is also very on the side of educating cops and reforming police and whatnot. And he always brings a really kind of clear perspective. I always like to hear his perspective. Like he would be, you know, if we had a full-time radio gig, he would be the guy to bring on a lot anytime these kind of things happen. Cause he seems to have very good knowledge on the protocol and what went wrong and things like that. Cause right now it's not looking like this went right. And then now you have it looks like basketball tonight.
The basketball games got postponed. I know the Celtics and Raptors are talking about postponing tomorrow's game one.
Some baseball, I saw.
Baseball games got postponed. The WNBA just announced they're not playing tonight.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? God bless them. I mean, number one, it's great to see they're getting support from their leagues. I mean, if this was 4 or 5 years ago, you know damn right well, like, the owners and the commissioner would be, like, in front of a camera right now. I'm disappointed in the players. You know, we're trying to entertain people during this pandemic, and right. this is happening, and that's happening. It seems for, like, the most part, these owners are backing the players up, and these players are walking the walk. As in the NBA, it's like they put the – everybody put the, like, the slogans on their jerseys, but, like, some players took it an extra longer and nowhere to get in front of the camera. Like, LeBron James was saying, you know, I don't have a slogan on my back because I don't feel it represents my word, but here's what I'm going to tell you what I think. And
they're
walking their walk. It wasn't, I mean, because you got to give NBA credit for, they've been doing this for a while. Like, they if you remember the ESPYs a couple years back, they stood up together and talked about the problems in the world and backing up Kaepernick and all that fun stuff.
Right.
So when this happened and they literally said, they could have easily just said, guys, look, get these games over with. We'll talk about it after the game. We want to get out of the bubble. We want to get home. They're literally like, no, we're not going to entertain people. This is another example of, you know, brute force for no reason whatsoever. And we're not going to sit back and go, well, we're props,
right?
You know, it's one of those, oh, things aren't that bad. Look at these African Americans playing their sport, and
they don't care.
Entertaining. They're literally saying, no, if you're going to literally say we're only valiant if we are famous, then screw you. Go watch a rerun of something.
Yeah, I'd be curious now how long they sit, if they sit out the rest of the season. I'd be interested in it. You know, like, see what happens. It's I don't know. It makes you wonder. Like, I wonder if they do this under normal circumstances, like under a normal season, if they would sit out these games. But it is like a lot of criticism, especially of, like, Jordan always got criticized of, like, not using his voice at all for, you know, his celebrity at all for sending messages and supporting things. So it is kind of cool to see, whether you agree with it or not, at least they're, like, being proactive and being, expressing their opinions and whatnot. So it is interesting. It's just another sign of the times that it's just everything is so fragile right now. It's just, and then you throw in, like, along with America, like, all this is going on, and then you throw in these superstorms that look like they're going to crush Louisiana again, and parts of Texas. They're saying, like, 150 mile an hour winds, possibly 30 miles inland. So God knows what's going to happen with that. You know, you always pray it blows out the sea, but, oh man, I mean, we are in a the Thunderdome, man. It's a rough time to be an American. Not that we are, like, rough and living in poverty right now, but everything is seems to be falling apart or being pulled in both directions, and everything's coming undone.
Well, somebody kind of brought up a good point, and I think we kind of talk about this. Like, we all think about the great empires of history, like the Roman Empire, the kingdoms of England, Genghis Khan, the Soviet Union. We all sat back and said, there's no way they're going to topple, and they toppled.
Right.
Could this happen here?
Yeah, could.
And kind of interesting, how would we break up America if we said, all right, we're splitting?
Yeah, like, what if the North and South break up, Mike, and we're in different countries doing this? What if, like, all of a sudden, me and you can't do the podcast anymore because I'm, like, a Yankee and you're a Southerner now?
Well, I kind of thought about that, and I don't think we can make it that crystal clear, because let's think about it. I mean, if you just go little north and south, California is not going to take being in the South. And then you look at some states like Montana, Wyoming. I don't think they're going to appreciate being the quote-unquote North.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious of how, like, the breakup would occur. Like, even Florida, just Florida alone, you wouldn't know how they would split it. Because every year we don't know what they are.
What if the climate continues over these next 4 years, right? Trump wins again. Okay. Or Biden. There's going to be civil unrest on either side, right? People start hating each other more and more. There's more awful cases that happen, right? And the 2024 election comes around. And along with the election, they're going to do a state draft. So you are voting. So let's say New Jersey, right? You're voting. You're not only going to vote for which president you like, but you're voting what group what country your state is going to belong to. And then after that, they spit out all the numbers, boop, 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 and they're like, okay, well, the new country is Massachusetts, Wyoming, and New Jersey. Yay! Like, you're this country. And then they split up America.
Like, I mean, I'm trying to rationalize, like, the group. I could totally see, like, a grouping from, say, West Virginia, Virginia, the Carolinas, Tennessee, probably Georgia, Alabama. Like that big kind of grouping, whatever we'll call it, you know, Tuthanania, I don't know. I could see the Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
The most part being it, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Manhattan almost be like, listen, we're our own thing.
What if they just divided the country by football conferences and collegiate football conferences? The SEC is now a country.
But don't they have, like, screwed up ones where, like, the Big East has Boise State?
Oh, the Big East is demolished. It's they've lost so many schools and they just kind of filled school. Let me bring up the Big East. Big East Conference for...
I mean, I guess for starters, Hawaii has to be their own country because, you know, it's just weird to get on a plane for 6 hours and not need a passport. So right off the bat, we're just calling them a new country.
Let's also, I mean, if you're Hawaii, do you really want to be part of this crap coming up that's going on over here? Like, I might want to stay over there and be our own country.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. By the time their polls close, they already know the answer. They don't even know why they even show up. And it's never been. We never had a situation where, like, all right, 1 a.m, we got to see what Hawaii did. Like Alaska as well. They're just sitting there, like, what do they? They got combined like 6 electoral college votes or something insanely low like that. That's why nobody goes to those states. Yes. I think Obama was the only one that went to Hawaii because he's from Hawaii.
Right. No, he's not from this country.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Sorry.
Now it says the Big East is Butler, Creighton, DePaul, Georgetown, Marquette, Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, UConn, Villanova, and Xavier. So, yeah, all over the place.
I really honest, I don't know where 3/4 of those colleges are.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just, every week it just seems like this can't get any worse. Oh, here we go. It's like Monday rolls around. We're like, there we go. All right. Let's stack it on up, you know?
Yeah, we're in a bar and we're saying nothing can hit the fan even harder than 2020. It's like, hold my beer. Exactly. Watch this.
And it's funny because I like get sick of the, like the 2020 like memes. I'm like, all right, guys, I get it, 2020. And then it's like, well, god damn, it really does suck. Like everything keeps sucking, you know. Well,
speaking of which, the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Yeah, speaking of sucking, I hope you guys are enjoying your content. I think that's a good time to segue to our guest. You know, there's never really a natural segue on this show. Very rare are we talking about what our guest like does, you know, before they come on. We're always talking about like, what kind of road trip do you want to go on? Yeah, I want to go with Shaquille O'Neal, Norm MacDonald. Oh, and J.J. Burden's coming on the show. You know, it doesn't quite make sense all the time, but hey, that's how we like it. That's how we enjoy doing the show. All right, so we got really no natural segue to get to our guest here, so we might as well just jump right into it. We have a very interesting band coming on the show with former members of Pearl Jam, Candlebox, Skillet. Dave from Pearl Jam. And these guys are really cool. They got a really neat sound. They are called the Sons of Silver. They have their first EP out. They released another song during quarantine. And we had a really good time talking to them. So let's get these Sons of Silver on the line.
All right, hey guys, how you doing?
Good. Let's jump right into it, guys. First off, welcome all five of you. This is we've had a couple bands, full bands on before, and it's always fun because it's always fun to see who actually answers a question first and who stumbles all over each other. So
yeah,
it's gonna be great. So I want to welcome.
We don't like each other.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Let's
that's
just
the way.
Get that straight.
Me and Mike hate each other. So it's that's okay. Why he moved to Georgia. Actually, it's a big feud. It's
yeah. Next week I'm going to Puerto Rico because I can't stand him even more. So yeah. Just keep going down.
We're like the Van Halen of podcasts. You know, guys, we're here with the Sons of Silver. I assume all of you guys are in California.
Yes, yeah. We're all here in the greater Los Angeles area.
All right. So I guess to start us, so we are joined by, let's see, Adam and Dave and Pete and Brina and Kevin, so which makes up the band of Sons of Silver. So I guess we'll start with, first off, how long have you guys been together? And give us the origin story of Sons of Silver. Was this we're looking for, I need someone to jam with? Was this like recommended through friends? Did people put you together? Like, how did you guys all get together and start this band?
I guess you guys want me to take the lead on that one?
Sure. Yeah, do it.
Well, you have the best light.
So we came together. Basically, I was writing some new songs, and Brenham was recording them with me, and I decided to start playing them out live. I'd been stuck in the studio producing a bunch of stuff, and so I started playing a bunch of songs acoustically. I was bored. I said, Brenham, come on, join me on stage. She reluctantly joined me. It was the two of us doing an acoustic thing. We were still bored, so that's when I called up my dear friend, our bass player, Adam, and I said, Adam, help me out here. Want to come play some shows, put a band together with me? And he said, absolutely. He called Dave. Dave brought in Kevin, and boom, we were a band. But it was more of a singer-songwriter thing. Okay. Everyone was backing me up, you know, working on songs that I had written. As time went on, and as we played a bunch of shows, we actually sort of hit the ground running, and we were fortunate to play a lot of shows right away, playing, you know, 60-70 shows a year for a couple of years. For those first couple of years, it really brought us together both musically as well as friends,
right?
And at that point, you know, we all love rock and roll. We just naturally started writing together, started playing stuff that was more rock and roll. Next thing we knew, the sound had completely changed, our vibe had changed, our attitude had changed, the way people perceived it was changing. And we rechristened ourselves Sons of Silver.
Awesome.
Interesting. I mean, I saw that in an interview you talked about that. Like, what kind of went to that kind of slow progression? Was it just how you're feeling the vibe, like practicing on stage, hearing from the audience? What kind of made you, you know, move things around kind of to what you are today?
Someone else take it.
Yeah, all right. But, you know, I think the whole thing just came together very naturally with just, you know, one person knowing another person who came in. And then, as Pete said, you know, we got together playing these songs that were kind of already put together. And then little by little, we all kept throwing in our own little bits and pieces. And then we just started finding that we wrote really fast when we went into the room and just started jamming as a band and found things that we liked. And it was like, okay, that's a great idea. This is something cool. And honestly, we have so much stuff that we'll never be able to finish it all. So it's really a matter of us going through and picking the ones that inspire us the most, or, you know, something that Peter has a great lyrical idea for, or he's got a melody set. And then we just kind of naturally finish the ones that we feed the strong kids, basically.
Yeah. Right. You know, so they survive. Darwinism.
Hey.
Yes. Yeah. So the whole project's very natural. So it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's awesome. So when you guys are forming, a lot of you are coming from very well-known bands, bands who had major success, still have major success, are known, you know, on everyone's radio. So like Dave and Adam, when you guys are coming into a new band, is this like very exciting to just start something completely new? Or do you guys get any kind of like, I don't know, like, do you get a lot of fans like, oh, does the new stuff sound like Pearl Jam? Or does this new stuff sound like, do you have to like, be like, no, man, this is something completely new. And is it really exciting to kind of reinvent yourselves in something new?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Cause I've played mostly rock bands, you know, that's what people have heard me do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really cool. We, from the get go, it was kind of a different way of doing things. So then it really, like, the more we did, for me, it was like the simpler I could, you know, figure out what I was doing, the more fun I was having. So now it's just like, you know, it's really opened up a whole, like, this is kind of music like I've never done before, because I never really approached it that way. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Almost the least I can do with keeping it cool and interesting and grooving and everything. But you know what I mean? Least amount of stuff to get that done.
For sure. And how about you, Adam, as far as coming into this band?
Well, yeah, I mean, same thing. But I think, you know, again, going back to what I was saying about one of the best assets I think about this band is it is just natural.
Right.
You know, like, we all just come in and do what we do. Like, we're not trying to create something necessarily specific, this or that. It's really just a matter of we're playing things and what excites us, and we just run with it, you know. So we had no idea what this band would be. And each batch of songs we go to do, they're different than the other batch. We're never going back trying to reverse engineer, recreate something. We're just all playing together and vibing off of what each other does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I think it helps too that, you know, everyone, well, especially Adam, you and Dave and Kevin, you guys played with each other in different bands and different jams and
right.
before this, you know, and so you already have a past history of being really comfortable with each other and trusting each other's creativity. So I think that's been huge.
Now, Bree, I wanted to ask you, as I was researching for this interview, I kind of noticed like you had the background in sound engineering. I'm just kind of curious, were you a performer previous to that, or was it literally you got just pulled onto the stage and say, let's see what's on the other side, if you will?
Yeah, well, I grew up, my instrument is my voice. So I grew up singing all my life and playing piano. And I started playing guitar, I don't know, sometime in my 20s. But really my focus and my just entire focus has been engineering since about 2006. So actually that's how I met Peter. I met him in a recording studio. And before we were even, you know, involved, I guess, he actually asked me to be his engineer. And then
did he get down on one knee?
You know, actually, he did propose to me in the studio. So,
oh, all right.
Bree, will you jam with me for life?
Totally. You rock with me for life.
So it's actually yes. I guess the answer is I've always been a musician, and because I love music so much, and it's such a big part of who I am, it drew me to be an engineer because I'm also a total geek when it comes to science, and so kind of it balances both. It's the science and the art, and through what Peter was saying, engineering for his sort of more singer songwriter acoustic stuff, he needed someone to sing backgrounds and to, you know, mostly backgrounds,
right?
And so that's kind of how I got my foot into it. I started singing harmonies, and then all of a sudden I'm for the ride. So that's great.
Now I do comedy, and always fascinated. I ask every band and every writer, every author we have on the show. I'm kind of like a broken record because I'm fascinated by how different groups or even different comics do their writing. You got comics who go on stage and think of something and run with it, or you got comics that are at home typing word for word and, you know, kind of approaching it like a prose in some ways, and then finding the beats on stage. And then so many bands, we've had everyone from hip hop artists to big bands to ska bands. And they all seem to have a different way. What is your guys' writing process? Are you a go to the studio, jam it out, and riff on something for a while? Pete, do you come in with lyrics? Kevin, do you come in with a bass line or something like that? Like, what is your guys' like approach to writing music?
I'd like to hear what the other guys think. Maybe Kevin.
Kevin's up. Yeah. Kevin, yeah.
Kevin has the second best lighting. Kevin has the second best lighting in the group.
What do you think, Kevin?
I mean, to me, it's all of that, you know? But mainly, I think it starts from just us getting in a room and starting to play.
Yeah.
Any one of us could play any one thing that sparks somebody else to do whatever they're going to do. Within a few minutes, we're usually looking at each other like, yeah, all right. This could be something.
Right.
Pete's usually singing as this is all going on too. He's doing whatever to find his thing, you know. It all kind of, it's almost stream of consciousness, at least in phase one.
Yeah.
So, and then I think after that we'll stop and listen and be like, okay, no, yeah.
Yeah.
No. You know.
Now as far as Pete, do you come in with lyrics or like a song structure first, or do you like, for better words, like just kind of flush sounds out and then apply lyrics to that?
I occasionally can, but I choose not to for the most part.
Right.
I'll bring in ideas like riffs, and just speaking for myself, what I'll do is I'll stockpile what I call kindling.
Right.
And it's, you know, a riff, maybe a lyrical idea, a chord progression, even though I really don't rely on those that much, but some type of little nugget that could get us rolling if we happen to hit a bump in the road and we're stalled for a moment. And I literally mean stalled for a moment, where there's like 30 seconds where we're scratching our heads where to begin.
Right.
That's it. And I personally prefer to come in to have as little as possible. Maybe lyrically, maybe there's a state of mind, a general inspiration, maybe let's go down this path. But aside from that, no, we go in with nothing, absolutely nothing. It's a blank slate. Someone will start playing something, and within a few seconds, another person is following him. Kevin will maybe play a little guitar riff, and Adam will, you know, come in with the bass line. Then Dave's joining in a beat, and then I'll start singing and playing guitar on top of that. And there we go. And Brina will then pipe into the microphone, hey guys, I really like that, maybe, you know, Peter, you can change your part to this, or Dave, maybe you can, you know, change your beat up here. And that's it. And as Kevin was saying, we'll go back and review what we may jam on for 10, 20, 30 minutes, and we'll pick our best pieces, take them back, and start refining them from there. But it's kind of fun because we have no idea where we're gonna go. It's
just, yeah.
Well, we landed here. Wow, okay. This is fun.
Yeah.
Hey, it's bringing up, it seems like you're all really good friends. Like, it talked about, you don't even like mostly talk about music. You talk about like sports and just like everyday things. Does it make the music so much easier when you're just natural and you're around like a bunch of friends versus kind of like a business? We got to get in the studio. We got to get this album out. Everything. Don't talk to me about anything other than what's going to be on this album.
I would think so. Everyone else?
I think so. Yeah.
And we're also very fortunate that we have that studio, you know, it's a little different where, you know, because the studio is ours, we're not paying it, and we don't feel that meter running in that respect. We're like, okay, we've got 4 days in the studio. We got to get everything done.
Right.
It's like, you know, we come in, we'll work a day or two this week. Okay. We'll see you guys next week. You know, because we have that relaxed time frame, we can get in there and screw around with riffs for a couple of hours and not feel like we're wasting valuable time, because we are coming up with good stuff. But, you know, most people can't spend that time writing in the studio. You've got to mess with it elsewhere, at home or rehearsal studio, and then come in and try and capture it. Where we're in the opposite thing, where we're just jamming and we're capturing it hot as it's happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we're always recording it. So if there happens to be a moment and that's the one and we can't recapture it, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's kind of, I'll add that it's actually kind of fun sometimes. There have been a couple occasions recently where I've taken a minute to go and listen back to how we ended up with a song, because sometimes, I mean, frankly, I don't remember half the time, like, where did that come from? Where did that lyric come from? I don't remember. Was I reading? Oh, it just popped up. So I've listened back, and you'll hear it come to life. Maybe we started with noodling on sort of one sound, and then within 5-10 minutes it evolved into something else. And it's pretty interesting because it's actually very well documented. You can hear where we started and where it where it ended up as in ended up being for that day, but very close to the final. And you can hear everyone feeding off of each other. You can hear the drums starting to feed off the bass feeding off the guitar feeding off the vocal. And then that cycle repeats itself and it sort of escalates and then boom, an energy really hits. And you really can sense that moment, that 5, 10, 30 seconds where we really start locking in. And it lasts usually for 5 or 10 minutes. And then we're like,
okay, we're done. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, let's go check it out and have a smoke.
Yeah. So now obviously COVID hit in March and you guys had released Doomsday Noises, the EP and whatnot. I'm curious, were you guys ramping up to tour this and start getting out and playing before this? And if not, like we have talked to a few bands during this, and I think there's going to be a huge outpouring of really awesome music coming out soon just because of, you know, people have basically been confined to go in and write. And I think you're going to get a lot of different sounds from bands that you didn't expect and whatnot. So how did you guys adjust to this, you know, basically, you know, touring being done, shows being done for a little while? I don't know if you guys are opening up at all or been able to play, but how have you guys taken this time and either shifted gears or have you used it to write new music? What have you guys been doing as far as this COVID quarantine time?
Dave, Kevin.
I mean, we did do a song and a video, which is really cool. That was early on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, quarantine in California.
Quarantine in California. Yeah, I just saw that on the Spotify.
We came up with more stuff just because. I mean, everything is shut down. Some people aren't even recording. I don't think so.
Right.
I feel we're super lucky to be able to do it for sure.
Yeah, I think we're doing it for our sanity, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So are you guys feeling motivated, or is this did this put like a big old, you know, wet towel on top of the band?
We're absolutely if anything, it's like it's obviously a bummer not to be out on the road and have that experience and be able to interact.
Right.
But on the plus side, we have all this freedom to be in the studio and really, and we're inspired. We're very, very inspired. So you get to have that outlet, and it's not a week in the studio and then a month out. You just really get to focus on that inspiration.
Right.
Sounds like, you know, a lot of the different musicians and bands that you're talking to, you know, I think a lot of people are able to maybe put some of their emotions, what they're observing in the world, whatever it is, into music. And I think that's therapeutic and inspiring.
Look, if I may add, because I tend to be more involved with the business side of things, this has actually been a good thing for us.
Okay.
Aside from the touring, but in that respect, it's been good too. And it's been good in this sense. One, our lyrics just happen to be very timely. Doomsday Noises is a collection of songs that we finished recording at the end of 2019. And you have songs like Rude Awakenings, the lead track. You have Deep Division, which is likely to be the next single. Our current single is Read Them Their Rights, and I'll get back to that in a second. But you also have songs like World on Fire. I'm missing one here. Outbreak, for God's sake. So the point is that it was very, very timely. We actually pushed back the release. It was originally going to come out in April, but it opened up some windows for us where other big acts weren't releasing things quite as much, so we didn't have to compete for visibility, especially with regards to terrestrial radio, which has been very good for us. Read Them Their Rights, our first single to terrestrial radio, has now been on the top 40 for going, this is the 7th week.
Yep.
And that's pretty remarkable, if I may say so, if we may say so ourselves, for the first release, the debut.
The EP is great, by the way, guys. So compliments to all you guys. I've been bumping it in the car for the whole week leading up to this interview. So.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is it would have been a tougher fight had it not been for this opportunity. And at the same time, you know, it's given us a chance to come back in the studio now regularly. And now that we've gotten the release under the way that is, and really come in with some added energy that we're building that audience. Things are going on and we're preparing for next year when by the middle of the year, We expect to be on the road, and we're getting a lot of great response from the industry at all levels. So in that sense, it's really been good for us. Whereas if we'd rushed it to get out in the road and really push it hard and support it and been battling against these other acts, it may have been a little harder, a little, emotionally as well as physically and financially.
And then we also wouldn't be three releases ahead of our schedule.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Nothing like
literally. Backlogging. It's not funny. We really are three releases ahead.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's very liberating.
Out of curiosity, when you guys tour, are you still doing like the tour bus thing? Are you flying out to gigs? And I'm wondering if somebody could share their most embarrassing touring story with us.
Kevin, you're up. You haven't talked in a bit. Yeah. You're on the hot seat.
We'll see you tomorrow, Kev. Yeah.
I feel like Kevin's like trying to already hide in that dark corner. He's also my lower right corner of the Zoom thing, so he's just looking darker and like he has the scariest lighting of you guys all too. So
I would say he's a dark guy, but he's probably the lightest guy in the band.
I really can't think of anything. I did knock over a whole boat of guitars once on stage. Have to pick them up in front of people. That's never fun.
So it was your boat of guitars?
My boat, yeah.
At least it was yours.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, definitely. It's tough to be cool after that, though.
Yeah.
Rock and roll, I meant to do that!
Never mind.
You mean you didn't feel like the edge after that falling off stage?
Oh, yeah.
Oh man! At least I didn't break anything.
Hey, but you could have got one of those cool Dave Grohl throne things that he was sitting in when he broke his leg. Exactly. You know. But I guess this question's for I guess Dave. Dave, when you're starting a new band like this, and not to make you blush, but you've been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you get to restart your music. I'm sure you've done a million different projects since then. Do you try to focus on doing something completely different, or are you more receptive to like what the new guys in the band that you're joining are giving you and you're just going to kind of go with it? Or do you kind of bring a certain type of style that you are, you're known for, or are you just completely like an open book with new bands?
No, I'm just trying all kinds of new things right now. In fact, anything I've done before, I really am trying to avoid.
Get away from.
It's been, that's another good thing about these tunes. It's like my first thought, I mean, sometimes we'll be just jamming on an idea and it's like, we'll kind of all go there in the rock mode more.
Right.
But once we start kind of fleshing out, what we're doing, then everybody kind of gets a little more streamlined, which is nice. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which is kind of new for me, but I really like it. I think it's a new kind of discipline, creatively, but I find it super creative in the space you can create. You know what I'm saying? Like that to me is like more fun creatively lately. So yeah, it's, I think, a lot different just because a lot of times, the song will not dictate what you're doing, but kind of lead you down a certain path that makes the most sense. Exactly. So I think the fact that we're all doing that simultaneously is helping, because we'll catch ourselves like, we're falling into what's comfortable kind of thing,
Right.
Like, how do you guys like to play around with your music? When you're experimenting, are you changing up speeds? Are you somebody like bringing a bassoon in to try to put into the song?
Well, all of that. I mean, I think, the nice thing is that, everyone in the group has their own unique style and their own great musicianship. And so there's never anyone having to pull anyone along in this, so to speak. So the good thing is when we get in there to jam, and we've talked about it a little bit, is, somebody will play something, someone else will chime in with something completely different. And then by the time we get everyone in there, we're not really doing like lockstep things. Everyone's finding their own contribution. It's kind of like potluck music, we bring it in and we're really good about finding things that work well together. And then we play it knowing it's being recorded. we'll lock into something and we'll play it for a while, and if somebody's sorting on something, we'll work on it. But usually what we'll do is one at a time, each of us will take turns. Okay, we've played this for, you know, 8 bars, 16 bars. We got a vibe on this. We've come around the cycle. We've done these two or three parts together. Okay, this time around, I'm going to do something completely different. And so we'll push things and we take the idea and we'll stretch it and try as many different ideas that we can each contribute to it. Sometimes you get to a great new place. Sometimes you end up coming back with pieces of it, you know, and then you look and you see everything we did on this basic idea, and everyone maybe played 4 or 5 different ideas to this general musical piece. And then you find which are the ones that excite everyone, which are the ones that make the piece move, make you feel a certain way. And then we just sort it out from there. So we're very lucky that we can all experiment and try new things. There's no harm, no foul. And you come back and you know, you find the nuggets. It really is like, you know, sifting through and kind of mining out the good chunks out of all the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. And it may at times just be a few bars. You may play something for like 15, 20 minutes and think, wow, this is great. And you go back and listen and you're like, yeah, it wasn't so hot. But those 2 to 4 bars right there, there was something there. There was a seed.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you go back and work on that perhaps the next day, and that blossoms into a big thing. You just don't know what you're going to get. But fortunately for us, knock on wood. Where's the wood here? Knock, knock, knock. We just keep churning out and we're having fun doing it.
I will say, though, sometimes, not a bassoon, but sometimes someone will bring, like Dave will bring in a crasher or a cowbell, or Adam will have a new pedal, or Kevin, I mean, both Kevin and Peter have these really fun pedals. Kevin's got these great ones that are, what is it called, Kevin? The one that basically has strings and different...
Oh, the Mel 9. It allows me to do, like, Mellotron sounds.
Right.
It's awesome. You know, so like someone will, or I'll, you know, I'll decide to do something kind of wacky with my microphone placement. And so I think we all kind of, because it's so relaxed and we really trust each other and are having a lot of fun, there's a lot of room for someone to bring something in, and it does inspire. I mean, it's not all the time, but, you know, that is one thing. People will bring some things to kind of throw a wrench in it.
That's awesome.
In a good way.
So, I mean, so you guys got Doomsday Noises. It just came out. You released Quarantine in California. So we're coming up on the time here. So I kind of want to, this is a 2-part question. So I'm going to end on Peter. I'm going to go around the horn here. But so Pete, I want you to end with where people can come check this out and give us your info and whatnot. But, you know, you guys are all artists. You all had years and years and years of music experience, but you know, as most musicians or artists, you guys are generally into other things too. So I was curious what you guys outside of music are kind of into that maybe fans wouldn't know about. Are you into knitting? Are you into painting? Or are you just straight music all day long? So Adam, I'm going to start with you.
All right. well, you know, I'll kind of go into sports, you know, for like a break from music, because no matter how much I love doing it, having a, you know, an outlet that's not music is nice. Big hockey fan.
Yeah.
You know, just, I don't, you know, necessarily watch a whole ton of games. Of course, I'm a Kings fan in hockey and they're not even in it.
But, oh, you beat my Devils in the last.
But I definitely keep up with teams, you know, on you know, Sports Center and stuff like that. And I love to follow that. So that's a good outlet. And then, you know, I've got my family, my daughter's 12 right now. So, you know, or awesome. She's 13. So I got a teenager now. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going with that and back to school. So I think just, you know, life stuff.
Awesome.
You know, music takes up a lot, though.
Awesome. Kevin, how about you, man? I feel like you're going to leave this and go play the bassoon in that little studio that you're in right there.
no bassoon.
No.
I watch a little baseball.
Okay.
But really, I have a 7-year-old, so I'm pretty deep in the Lego world right now.
There's literally nothing wrong with that. Adult Legos is like a big thing now. Yeah. Bria, how about you?
I paint a lot on my free time, and I love to go out dancing, although that's not happening these days.
No, it's just dancing alone right now. That's all.
Yeah. Dancing in our kitchen.
Yeah. Awesome. Dave, how about you? I see you got a drum set in the back.
Yeah. My kit, or like my dining room now. They're spread out all over. I ride my stationary bike. I do that a lot. And What else? Yeah, I'm watching baseball right now. I've been watching a lot of that. That's been nice, actually. And I do crosswords, but my new favorite one is the spelling bee.
Oh. Listen, if you get in the Hall of Fame and win the National Spelling Bee, just retire. Just retire. And finally,
make sure he gets into the Hall of Fame twice.
Yes, yes. Finally, Pete, how about you? And where can people go check out Sons of Silver?
Well, first of all, where can they go? Just Google Sons of Silver.
Right.
Fortunately, there's not a lot of competition for that name. So if you Google Sons of Silver, you'll find our website, Facebook page, Instagram account, Twitter account, any accounts that we have hidden that we don't want people to know about, you'll find those too. Spotify, you know, Apple Music, Deezer, Tidal, all Pandora, you'll find us all in those, the usual places, Amazon Music. As far as my personal tastes or time, I should say, outside of music, I don't have a lot of time outside of music, but when I do have time, well, I take that back. Sports, big sports fan, but I just haven't had a lot of time lately. Lakers fan, diehard Lakers fan, been to a few game sevens or nice. A couple game sevens nice. since I was a kid. But I would add, I'm a political junkie, and unfortunately, over the last few months, I've developed a really, really bad habit that I need to tackle with regards to Twitter. I wake up, roll out of bed, go on Twitter, check it during the day, and then go to bed at night having checked Twitter for like 20.
So we just got cut off from our Zoom because me and Mike, we can't afford the bills. But Pete, you were saying you were just in the middle of you spend too much time on Twitter.
I spend too much time on Twitter, it's bad for my perception of humanity, It's really good for the songwriting. You know, being that a lot of our songs are most more social, political, you know, because mind you, the lyrics, I'm the lyricist in the band, but they're not all my ideas. We're bouncing ideas around each other all day long. So I'm definitely, I'm just sort of the mouthpiece for the band, the big mouthpiece.
So you're saying you don't go on Twitter to just see how well everyone's getting along and how peaceful the state of it.
I do. You know, it's been very, I feel so much better about the world every moment I'm on Twitter. Actually, you know, it's funny. Seriously, though, my dad was here by the studio about an hour ago, and he's like, they should ban Twitter. They need to make it illegal. And I'm like, they can't do this. They need to find a way. It's bad for people. It's bad for the world. So I'm like, good luck.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong.
Maybe TikTok can buy Twitter, and by rule, we'll lose it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. TikTok. Since we do have like an extra minute here or two, I did want to ask Pete and Bria a question as far as like, how do you guys find that balance as far as working, you know, and making music and then like. Like, is it like once you start making music, like a different switch gets turned on, or is it like still harmonious through the whole thing? Like, how does that work as far as like that give and take of making music together and also, you know, being married together?
I think we're still trying to figure it out. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy. You know, we're two very strong personalities, and in a lot of ways, we're completely opposite. But I think the good thing is, although we have, like, if you asked us to reach point A, I would take the left side and he would take the right side, but we would both get to point A. So I think, you know, but it also balances us out, being right. You know, he has his tendencies, I have mine, and somehow when we come together, it's a good mix.
Yeah. I would say that we're like our band in general. We really respect and appreciate each other. I know I'm getting super sappy and sentimental, but which is a very rare thing for me. But seriously, we really respect each other, Brian and I together, but also collectively, we appreciate each other, and we know what we have is very very fortunate and very fragile. So we all work together to take care of it. And Brian and I, you know, especially hard, because we are together 24.
So, all right, that's great. So Doomsday Noises is not about you guys, right? It's
No,
it's just the things we're hearing from the world.
Yeah.
Twick-twack.
Oh, God.
One final question from me. All of you have been in the music business for quite a while. Just out of curiosity, like sometimes like my wife will put on the podcast and I cannot stand listening to my voice. Just out of curiosity.
Neither can I.
Like, yeah. But if like your band song or one of your past band songs, it comes on the radio, are you sitting back like relaxing, jamming to it? Or are you kind of like, ugh, change the channel?
That's a good question.
I think it depends on what the song is. I mean, you know what I mean? Like if it reminds you of a good experience or positive things, it's good. If it was a horrible experience for you, then you probably feel that as well.
Yeah.
How about you, Kev?
A little of both. There's examples of both, I think, you know?
Yeah. Dave?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd agree with Kev. No, I like hearing it. I still, you know, I've been listening to mostly jazz, so
that's awesome.
When I hear a song, you know, like an older song, that I like, yeah, it sounds good. I'm enjoying it.
That's awesome. Guys, I want to thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoyed the time here. Like I said, I'm not BSing when I said I really enjoyed the EP. I was just talking to Pete right before we started the second call here. It's not what I expected, you know, like as far as the description of the band, you know, and that's what I think I like about it most. It's not, it's got a lot of layers to it. There's a lot of different styles going on it. So I hope you guys keep doing what you're doing, and hopefully we come out of this soon and you guys are touring and supporting your either this record or the next one. And we really appreciate the time we had with you today.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It's been a good time.
The Sons of Silver, Mike.
Good stuff. I'm just superly happy, surprised we were able to get five people on, and it was actually kind of smooth running there.
I was just going to say that. I think the Zoom helps for sure, as far as being able to see each other. Because we've had a couple bands on. We were just talking about this before we did this. We had the Steven Seagulls, who, amazing band, but that was a crazy interview. Not only that, there was like a language barrier there, so that was really fun.
Yeah, I knew when we threw them a curveball question, because then it'd be like, okay, and they would just name a band member and force them to answer the question.
Yeah, they were like, okay, Tukey, you. And then we had the Victims of Circumstance and Thumpasaurus and a couple other bands. But you know what? I think it comes, these guys all have experience too, so they've probably done this before. But go check out the album. It's actually very good. And it is not what I was expecting. It's got a really cool vibe to it. So go check out Sons of Silver, and their album is Doomsday Noises. And they released another song called Quarantine in California.
Yeah, I was expecting the bassoon. That's why I was surprised. I went through the whole song. I'm like, come on, it's got to happen.
Yeah, you're really into that bassoon metal lately, man. I don't know.
You know, I have very specific needs in life, and I demand the world meet them. And that... You know, I didn't want to end the conversation on an awkward note. I thought I'd throw that hint in there.
Right.
But we'll send it to their management. I'm sure the next EP is just be nothing but bassoon.
Very bassoon. Him.
We'll be playing.
Yeah, it's Dave Cruz in here. He's not playing drums on the album. He's he's playing bassoon. But really cool. Really cool group of guys. So and gal. So go check them out. Sons of Silver.
Hey, out of curiosity, like, how sensitive is, like, your stomach or stuff? Like, how, when it comes to, like, eating foods or something like that, like, how are you with, like, no, I won't touch that or anything like that?
Okay. So, I have a sensitive stomach, like, what seems like all the time. Like, I don't, it doesn't seem like there's one thing that triggers anything. Like, it's not like, oh, man, I gotta stay away from that. But it feels like anything could, like, get it going. Like, obviously hot stuff after a while, but I'd put hot sauce on, like, everything. But there's nothing I could say that really just, like, it's not like, hey, I eat that, I automatically in the bathroom for the next hour. One thing I do remember that would affect me was, like, green curry, like, spicy green curry, like, Thai green curry. That usually fired up the old system, but... other than that, nothing. There's not like one thing in particular.
Yeah, I mean, what the reason I ask you is, I've been getting calls from my local grocery store, Kroger.
Okay.
Apparently, they had some kind of like food recall. Mm-hmm. They had like bags of peaches that possibly had like salmonella.
Interesting, because when we started this podcast, you were munching down a peach.
No, that was a nectarine.
Oh. It kind of reminded me when you got on live, you know that Always Sunny episode where they're doing the game, they're all addicted to that role-playing game, and Frank is like trading peach trading like sexual favors for peaches, and he gets a crate of peaches and he's eating them on FaceTime. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, so I guess they've been telling people for the last week and a half. So I guess they got my information because I used their store card and I did buy a bag of peaches, but those peaches are long gone now.
Okay.
I'm just like curious, like, would you be concerned knowing that you might have ate like a whole bag of salmonella peaches?
All right. How long have the peaches been gone?
I would probably say about a week.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Yeah,
I'm good. Like the wife generally doesn't, when I get fruit, she doesn't obtain them. So I'm not worried about her. So I pretty much cleaned out the bag, but it's one of those, they called me a couple times. Like it's the automated message. Just say, hey, you might want to bring this back. And then like every time I go to the store, I guess they have some kind of program setting where it's like, I go through the instant checkout and it's like important message at the end of your receipt. I'm like, okay. And then the receipt comes. It's like, you might have salmonella peaches.
Now, is there a special in the store? Like, oh, peaches are $1.99 each, but if you buy these salmonella peaches, they're 30 cents a pound. You know?
Well, I grabbed them at the time, and I think it was at the time, like the pre-packaged bag was a little less than if you just grab them individually and bag them and buy the pound. That's why I grabbed them.
I picture you getting the circular, like, oh, okay. Trash bags are on sale. We could use them. Oh my God. Salmonella peaches are for 30 cents a crate. We got to get down there and get some before they sell out.
I don't know what country salmonella is, but they must be trying. They're begging people to grab their peaches. I don't know.
Yeah, so I would, like, if I knew right away, I would be maybe a little cautious for, like, 24 hours. I'd be like, ooh, do I feel anything? Do I feel... And then after 24 hours, I'd be like, well, I defeated salmonella, even if I wouldn't worry. But now my wife is like, she'll throw things out that I think are perfectly fine. I'm like, it's fine. Like, as soon as, like, tomatoes get a little, like, wrinkly, like, we get those grape tomatoes, she's like, garbage. Like, I'm like, no, they're fine. Like, just throw the crappy ones away.
Yeah, that's the kind of way I am. I was about to ask, like, do you or her, are you like expiration date checkers?
I am not. I'll give it the old ocular pat down, another Sunny reference, but, you know, I'll check it out. And, if it looks fine, smells fine, I'll eat it. Now I have had brutal food poisoning in my life where I went to the hospital and that's where they put me on morphine. Woo. I understand why people like heroin, put it that way. I'll never forget that. I was on the toilet for basically like 18 hours straight, like every 10 minutes. And then I slept on the bathroom floor because I would go to bed. So I was like, I gotta go to the hospital. And, yeah, they gave me the old IV, and they're like, I was in such pain. They're like, all right, we're going to put you on morphine. I'm like, all right. I swear to God, Mike, as soon as they said, I'm going to put you on morphine, and as soon as they just go, okay, boop, and it goes in, like floating above the bed, just like, no pain. Everything's great. Weird feeling, though. Your whole body just completely, like, kind of, like, warm. Don't feel a thing. Like, just completely, like... I could die now. Like, it's okay. It's okay. Like, there's no thoughts in my mind. So
it was such a good feeling. Once you got out of hospital, you rushed to the dumpster of your local grocery store and just started digging in and eating stuff.
Like, Mike,
Martin's great.
Mike, can you ship me some of those salmonella peaches, please? that was also unfortunate. The first time I ever got a rectal exam, that was not fun either. He was like, yeah, he went all the way up there.
I can contest those things. They thought I had colon cancer, so I had a big old camera go up there. That's
really
never a fun situation.
When was that? How long ago was that?
I was like 21.
Oh.
Yeah, I was pretty young. And I don't want to get into too gory details, but basically I went to the bathroom and it was all one color.
Ah,
it
wasn't blood.
Brownish.
Lots of blood.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was a weird thing. And I think I kind of talked about this, and you might have heard it, like, as I was trying to work it in my act. Basically, we went to a doctor who oddly had a history with my mom and dad, where, according to what I understand from my dad, he was, like, hitting on my mom back in high school, but she was dating my dad. And he was giving me gut. He's like, all right, I'm going to examine you. And he was trying to tell me where to position myself. And I kept listening and I kept going, and he got frustrated with me. And he's literally like, you're not making my life easy. When I'm looking at him, like, I'm bleeding out of my rectum.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm worried too much about your timing right now. But he basically, he's like, yeah, you're bleeding. You know, come back in a week. And my dad's like, all right, my son's kind of bleeding to death, so I think I'm going to take him to the hospital. And I was in the hospital for about a week, and I guess it was technically surgery where they did, where they basically put a camera up there and they cut some things out, kind of check things.
Like some polyps or something?
Yeah, they one was, quote, the size of a golf ball from what
Okay. Yeah.
And, like, I didn't find out till, like, I was out of the hospital. My dad basically said, there was a time they literally, when they saw them, they literally said, this kid's riddled with cancer.
Wow. Okay. And what did they were all cancer. They were all benign?
Yeah, they were all benign. Like, but so it was all well and good in there.
Do you have to get, like, checkups on that ever? Or
I'm once in a while. I mean, I'm in the age group where they have to check that stuff anyway, so it's not like a big deal anyway. But yeah.
So I can't imagine salmonella peaches are a good diet for that symptom.
Mike, you broke your record. We thought a golf ball was something. What's this? Oh, don't mind that. That's my salmonella peach up there. Don't touch that. I'm saving it for later. Yeah. But, and yeah, I mean, it was just like a weird thing. Like, I was thinking back, like, I don't check, like, expiration dates on stuff. And, like, I know all the, like, the mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise. I don't look at that kind of stuff. I remember a guy I used to work with, he would have lunch and he was looking for mayo and he put it on a sandwich and he ate it all up. And then, like, later in the day, he looked at the bottle. And apparently, the mayonnaise was expired for a year and a half.
Nice. Yeah.
Nothing happened to him, so that was all well and good. But
yeah, I would now here's a question. If you so you got the salmonella peaches, right? And they look perfectly fine to you. And then you got that message. Would you be like, and still eat them?
If I still had some, would I still eat them?
Yeah.
Like
if they look like perfectly orangey, fuzzy peaches, and you're like, oh, those look like perfect peaches, and you wanted one, and you were like, oh man, I gotta throw all these out. I just spent $10 on these peaches.
I think it's kind of a gray area where I said I wouldn't eat them just because my store is literally 5 minutes away, so I wouldn't mind bringing them in and then giving me fresh peaches in return. If I had to drive like 20 minutes right. to get this transaction done, I'd probably think about it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, part of me is like, salmonella, that's pretty bad. And do you really want to go to a hospital in this time right now? But
yeah, there's been many a times I've eaten something and I'm like, like cheese. You ever have cheese when it's like it starts to get that weird like hardness to it, and the like the edges are hard, and I'm like, probably shouldn't be eating this, but you know, if I slap it on a sandwich and put some mustard on it, you can't even taste it.
So you eat the crusty part. Like, I'll cut off the crusty part and do the good stuff.
I don't.
You'll eat the crusty
part. Well, it depends how crusty. Like, if it's like level 10 crusty, I'm not going to eat it. But, you know, it's just slightly outside crust.
Are you, like, what's level 10? Like, you bite into it and it sounds like you're biting into a potato chip?
Yeah, like, it's got that, like, hard frisbee like exterior. I'm not gonna do that, but you know, if it's slightly crusty and it's got a nice cheesy middle, I'm okay.
I just see you throwing like a slice of cheese and it boomerangs around the kitchen and you're like, yeah, that's still good. It came back to me. It knows where its home is at.
Yeah, see, my wife will drive me crazy because she'll be like everything smells to her. Like, you know, she got food poisoning. I think I told the story. That's actually how we found out we were pregnant. but anyway, it was a good story anyway.
Salmonella peaches?
Kind of.
Salmonella peaches, Brennan will be the child's first name.
Yeah. Little Sal. We'll call him Sal. Yo, Sally Peach! It was Super Bowl Sunday. We went to like a potluck dinner kind of thing at the lake. Basically, everybody brings food or whatever, and you just kind of hang out and watch the game. And my wife is like, I don't know, this meatball tastes a little weird. And I taste it. I'm like, it tastes fine. I don't know. So we get home, whatever, that night, and she's like puking nonstop. And in the morning, I'm like, all right, you okay? She's like, it'll be okay. So I go to work, and around 10 o'clock, she's like, I got to go to the doctor. I'm like, look, I could take a half day. Our friend up the street can take you. She said she would, and I'll meet you afterwards. So I took a half day. I grab a sandwich for lunch, and I'm coming home, and you know, my wife's in the living room. They're home already, and I'm like, how you doing, babe? You all right? She's like, yeah, you know, I'm hurting. I feel a little better. They gave me like a anti-nausea kind of thing, and she's like, oh yeah, and then there's this. And she like threw the pregnancy test at me. I'm like, get the hell. I think my sandwich fell out of my mouth. Because at that time we were not even trying. We had come off of, you know, miscarriage before that. So we weren't even into the trying stage yet. And I was like, get the hell out of here. And she's like, yeah, the doctor came in and asked me like, any chance you're pregnant? And she was like, no, I don't think so. You know, she's like, well, just in case, let's take this test. It's like, you know, or take this pill, take this medicine or whatever. And sure enough, the test came back positive, which is pretty wild. But yeah,
that is pretty wild, because I thought you needed to have sex to make a child. But I guess food poisoning does the same thing.
Correct. You could. It's proven science that if you eat bad turkey meatballs or bad turkey, you can end up pregnant the next morning. It's weird.
Well, that's why Kroger sent the message, because they're worried like Izzy would eat one, and then it's like, oh great, we got a bundle of joy coming. Just wonderful.
They're like, just so you know, you could be a dad after these peaches. It's science. My wife drives me crazy. She does the like everything now after that. She'll be like, she had food poisoning once before too, so like she'll open chicken that's been in the fridge for a day or two and be like, it smells weird. I'm like, it doesn't smell weird, like it smells fine, like let's just cook it. Like everything to her smells funny, so like she'll throw out all these things. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, but man, what are you gonna do
now? What about like things like gas station food stuff?
She's not big on like she's never really been big on like the fast food or anything, so usually she doesn't get that, so that's not really an issue. I, on the other hand, every once in a while I'll be like, ooh, look at that thing that's been rolling in those heaters for the last 4 hours. That looks good, I'll try that. But I don't do too much of the gas station food, but I don't know, man.
They got a ton of restaurants in the gas stations down here. You know? It's interesting.
Really? Honey, let's go fill the tank and go out for dinner tonight?
Yeah, it's like full-fledged like barbecue places and stuff like that. Like, they don't fool around down here. It's
interesting.
It's like, you go out for gas, you got a full night ahead of you.
Baby, it's our anniversary. You want to go down to the Exxon for a little bit and live it up?
Uh. Baby, we're going down to the mobile for some sweet loving and some chiclets.
Babe, tonight I'm thinking about getting a full tank. And then maybe some dessert after, some drinks, some dancing, you know. The BP has it all.
Yeah. And we go down to the car wash at the BP, you know, the bubbles flow from it. It's beautiful, and I'll dance the night away.
That's right. Well, Mike, speaking of salmonella and death and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's our first good segue ever.
That was pretty good, right? That was pretty good. I mean, we paused, so we did have like 20 minutes to come up with that, but no one needs to know that. No one needs to know that.
No, they don't need to know about our company meetings at all.
So, Mike,
notes we take.
Many times on the show, we've gone down the highway and talked about death before and what do we want for our bodies and things like that. I'm still unsure, actually. I don't know if I want to be buried or I want to be cremated. Do you know exactly what you want done?
I'm leaning towards cremation. Mm-hmm.
I do it?
I've come to a point where I just feel there's no reason for people to gather around and use up space.
Yeah.
Can you do it? I'm not really sure because I got a feeling one day I'm going to open the front door and you're just going to throw gasoline on me and a match. You know, it's just like, I couldn't wait.
Correct. Well, that was
my You're like, question. I heard you had a cold. Close enough.
That was my next question, but, you know, I'll do it cheap. I won a fire building contest in Boy Scouts back in the day. So I'm pretty good at starting fires.
That's beautiful. Now you have a story instead of need to worry about my life.
Yeah. So along the way, we've talked about interesting things you can do with your body. Like we talked about being planted. You could become a tree. We talked about I forget where it is. They put your body out on the top of a mountain, basically, and like vultures pick at you and stuff like that. We talked about the Viking burials. We've talked about a lot of things. But I figured before we go, I found a couple more that maybe you might be interested in. Now I'm unsure, so I guess I'm up for sale, if you will. I'm in the market. Oh. I'm in the market, I guess you could say.
So basically, morticians can start sending applications to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, and you know we can review them and see which one has the most validity to bury us.
This is the only time I would accept like unnecessary like mail and junk mail, because that would mean somebody out there is listening to the show.
Exactly.
So if we're cornering the mortician market, I'm okay with that. You know,
well, we did interview Cryonics earlier this year, so there was that. They're in the lead because they came on the show.
That's true. I don't know if I want my body frozen and like all my family and friends die, and then you unfreeze me years later when they're like, oh, okay, you're alive now. I don't know if I really want that.
Yeah, I'm awkward as is in this century. I can't fathom how I'm going to be in like 3025.
Yeah. All right. So, Berlo, do you have any interest in being turned into a diamond?
Okay.
So starting at a price point of life gem captures the carbon from a portion of your ashes, then heats it and presses it to turn it into a diamond. Then they cut it to your specifications and send your loved one the resulting diamond. Depending on what diamond and cut you choose, you can spend as much as $25,000 on your diamond. Now, funerals are pretty expensive. You know, they're in the teens of thousands of dollars. Now you spend a little bit more, Mike, and Izzy could be wearing you on her finger.
Yeah, but you know what would probably happen with my luck? Like, she'll then meet some, like, 20-year-old man who will sweep her off her feet.
Right.
And then she'll pass away, and then this douche will have me on a ring and be giving it to his next dame.
Yeah, but why is he a douche? Maybe he's a nice guy. Maybe he's just...
Anybody who grabs my woman after I'm dead is a douche. I'm calling it. I don't know who you are, but my wife has to live a life of misery when I'm dead, okay?
What if it's
That's all I ask.
Yeah, like, when you die, like, do you want people, like, do you want people just bawling over your death? Like, do you want them to be so upset that you're gone? Or do you want them to just be like, eh, he was cool, and like cheers and put you in the ground and say goodbye?
I mean, I hope I get a couple like Facebook thumbs ups.
Yeah, I need a couple tiers. I need a couple tags on my Facebook page. Like, oh, at Scott Brennan was so, he was so cool. He was so funny. Like, we'll miss him so much. Like, I can't go. Like, say you die and you go up to heaven or hell and you log on to your cloud computer or whatever, and you have no mentions at all after you're done. After you're dead, are you gonna be pissed off?
Yeah, I might turn into like those movies that have like internet ghosts. I'm probably gonna come back. I'm probably gonna like freaking like call out some people too. Like the people like, oh man, he's such a great guy. I'm gonna miss him. I'm gonna just show up like, dude, you weren't even listening to my podcast when I was alive. What the hell are you talking about? You never liked one of my episodes.
Yeah,
you didn't say. Every time it was my birthday, you'd roll in there, HBD. Yeah. That's the biggest cop-out on the planet.
Right.
Totally call him out.
I need some tears, man. I want my funeral to be a little celebration, but I want people to be pretty broken up that I'm gone. I just want it to be like, oh, God, I can't wait till we get to the repast so we can eat. Like, I want people, I want people like, unable to eat. Like, they're so sad.
I want all stages for everybody. I want the depression. I want the anger. I want the bargaining. I want the awkwardness, and then I want them to come like, all right, he's gone.
Yeah, I want the Italian. I want the Italian mother fainting, like, oh, out of sad. I don't have an Italian mother, but I want an Italian mother there that's so upset that I'm gone.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are accepting applications for the future Italian mother of Scott Brennan after he passes away. If you can send us some YouTube videos of you fainting, you know, we'll pick a winner in a few weeks and we'll send you a Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt along with the directions to his funeral.
I might get buried in the Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt considering we have so many extra stockpiles sitting here. So it's fine. All right. You want to be donated to a body farm? Body farms, or as they're known more formal, less goth name, outdoor forensic anthropology labs, are where researchers study human decomposition. Body farms help researchers learn things that help in law enforcement investigations, such as the decomposition timeline for a body that was found, say, wrapped in plastic and buried in a particular climate for a certain amount of time. They also use, Mike, this might interest you, they also use to train cadaver dogs and search and rescue teams to find human, like, so your body could be visited by some pooches, you know? There are presently 7 in the United States.
I kid you not, I've been trying to contact one of them to be on the show.
All right.
So right off the bat, if one of them comes on the show, they automatically get a body. Yours, mine, family member, who knows, who cares?
What if they only come on the show after you're dead?
Again, I'll have to be that internet ghost. I'm like, I'm gonna have to, as you're Skyping, my ghosts will just pop up and be like, bro, I sent you like 20 emails.
Yeah. I don't know, body farm, I guess there's some science to it, but I don't really want to be the body they use to kind of figure out murders. I don't really like that, you know, like, because essentially they're trying to figure out, like, okay, how long has this guy been in the ground, wrapped in plastic and buried? You know, it's not a nice death. And those cadaver dogs, they're just looking for you. And then after that, they're never going to visit you again.
Yeah, they're not going to play with me. And that's all I care about, number one. Number two, I don't think really anybody can come over and mourn you because I think they're going to be kind of turned off by the hundreds of other bodies surrounding me.
Yeah.
So as kind of interesting as it would be to talk to a person who deals with that, I don't think my body's going to end up there. So.
Okay, okay. What about being buried in a suit made of mushrooms and compost for yourself? For anyone who's not psyched about the environmental toll traditional burial and embalming takes on the earth, the biodegradable infinity suit, Mike, and it's pretty cool. It's black. It's got a hood. It's got buttons. Infinity suit and infinity shroud, which are made of mushrooms and other microorganisms, are zero waste and actually aid decomposition. You can get the suit or the shroud for $1,500 and be buried in either a biodegradable coffin or no container at all. That's pretty cheap.
No container at all. So they just like dig a hole and throw my mushroom body into the dirt and bury it?
I think so. I think they just toss you in there.
And that seems kind of rude, to be honest. I mean, it doesn't sound like that's really something of a plan. That seems like somebody that goes, oh crap, we were supposed to bury our uncle.
get the bodysuit that we have. You know, we've been saving this for something.
We don't have a suit. Just grab some mushrooms from the kitchen. Just do it. Just do it. We'll say it's environmental.
Also, I imagine clothes break down over time, don't they? I don't know. Unless they're like synthetic, I guess. I don't know. Like if you go in Under Armour suit.
I guess like cottons would, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, like think about it. Like the pair of jeans that you're wearing, how long do you think it would be before they disintegrate?
A long time, because I've had the same jeans for 10 years now, so and they're not disintegrating yet. So
Yeah. There's always a pair of jeans that have like holes and like ink stains on and stuff like that, and you're still like, that's my yard work pants.
They're generally your best jeans too; they fit the best.
All
right, what about being part of the ocean's habitat? Eternal Reefs mixes your ashes with environmentally safe concrete and then lowers the reef into the ocean where it becomes a man-made habitat for sea life. Reefs range from $3,000 to $7,500, and locations for reef casting are available along the east and Gulf Coast of the United States.
I can kind of dig that.
Okay.
I can definitely kind of dig it. If like my family misses me, they can go on like a fishing trip and pull me up and say their best wishes and put me back down.
Wait. They're going to pull a giant concrete / reef slab out of the water?
Well, I thought they would just like put me in like a plastic bag and put like some weights in there, and then they can
tie an anchor to a plastic bag and you're just kind of floating. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
that one's
that,
only $400.
Yeah. I figured like, I miss Michael. Izzy says that she can go on a boat trip, pull me up, and all, darling, I love you. I hope you're doing well in the afterlife, and put me back. I mean, I see win-win here.
I don't want to do that. I love the ocean, visiting the ocean, but the ocean also scares the hell out of me. The big vastness. I don't want to be buried in the ocean. It's too big and too scary. Too many big animals in there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can get your whole family to come with you down there. I mean, not all at once. I mean, that'd be kind of a sick thought.
Yeah, that's a little like Jonestown-ish, drinking the Kool-Aid, but
yeah, in the salmonella peaches.
Yeah, that's how your whole family's going to go. You're going to bring them over for Thanksgiving or something like that. Guys, you know Mike always brings those tasty, tasty salmonella peaches. Let's all take
Where's
a bite.
Where's the turkey at? Don't you worry. Just take a big old bite of this sweet, sweet peach.
Did everybody wear their Nikes? You know.
Why is there a bunch of boating gear around here? Don't you worry about that. Just worry about that delicious peach flavor. And whatever you do, don't pick up the phone. Kroger is calling me.
Either that or it's time for dessert. Mike brings that delicious salmonella pie every year. All right. What about get cremated at a facility that recycles unused energy from its cremations into electricity? This is England and Sweden. We're capturing heat from the natural gas being used in the cremation process to generate electricity, then giving electricity grid life even in death.
That I can kind of dig that. I think that's Trump's energy plan, actually.
Yeah.
Just like grabbing dead people and burning them and saying this is way better than solar. But
see, I don't like that. I feel like my energy would go to some kid on like his iPad playing Fortnite, and that would be the end of me. You know, like, yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. My luck, I'd end up in like a lava lamp or something like that. It's something that's just like, why am I existing? It's something like somebody forgot to turn off at the middle of the night, and like my body is just generating this stuff for no reason.
Yeah. All right, Mike, we're going to finish up here. I got three more. You just tell me which one you would like out of these three. Okay, so we could finish up and get the hell out of here, okay? So, Mike, you could be made into a firework, okay, and get launched into the heavens. For about $632, you could become a firework that goes out of over 100 feet. You could be red, blue, chrysanthemum bursts, whatever you want, okay? You can get your ashes pressed into a playable vinyl record with the audio of your choice, Mike. So, you know, you could play the Verve Pipes, "We Were freshman. Only Freshmen," every time they think of you. That's going to run you about $3,800. Okay. Or, Mike, would you like to be, you could live as an urn or a figure, but it's made into like a superhero. So it's like your face and like Superman's body, but that body is filled with your ashes. Pretty good options, right?
I like all three there, but I feel I'm going to do the firework.
So like one and done.
I'm not even going to tell my family which firework I am. Like, I think as part of the will, they have to guess which firework was Mike.
See, I'd be a little depressed if like I'm the first one off and then like everything else goes on, the finale goes on, and they're just like, that was Scott, the first little puny firework of the show. Like, and I don't like the and then that's it, that's the end of Mike. Like, I don't like that. Like, there's no remembrance of you. Whether they're going to take a picture, one of those crappy videos that everyone takes on Instagram, like of fireworks on July 4th. That's your memory.
And every time you take a picture, you're like 2 seconds before or 2 seconds after. You never get the exact time it explodes.
Yeah, it's kind of like fading out. Like, that's the picture they get. And like every year of your death anniversary, they're like, "Oh, we remember Mike," and they post that crappy picture every year. I don't know, dude. I don't know if I'm feeling that one. The vinyl might be a little creepy, though. I can't think of one song that I can identify with that much.
Yeah, I mean, think of it this way. Like, 50 years from now, is your great-grandchildren going to be playing the Scott record? Is it?
No.
Are they going to say, in honor of great-grandfather Scott, we're going to put on the vinyl record of Love Shack?
Yeah, yeah, let's remember Scott. Boom, 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 boom. It's as big as a whale. Rock Lobster. Like, oh god, he liked this song.
No, it's the only one in the record store they could find.
So I don't know, maybe I'll be like a Hulk figure. I like to identify with the Hulk, maybe, you know. Maybe they're like, that's always pretty cool, because I feel like the comics aren't going anywhere. Comic book movies aren't going anywhere. Maybe I'm just sitting in some kid's room, like, just flexing, and that's Uncle Scott.
I don't know. I think with time, like, eventually they'll be like, who the hell is this? Why did he pick Drax?
Yeah. So, Mike, there, out of all those ones that we talked about, real quick, which one entices you? We seem to go down this road a lot because it's pretty interesting. Mm. So, which one do you like?
I think I dig the Ocean Burial.
All right.
I think I do. I mean, go down there, people can enjoy a beautiful day at the sea, feed some fishies.
Gotcha.
You know, okay. Make my death an afternoon, if you will.
I think, if anything, I'm going to go with, I guess I'm going to go with the superhero figure. So I'm kind of like cool in my memory, at least anyway. I'm not just like a jar, which is basically what an urn is. I'm going to be like, at least like, I don't know, something cool. You know, hopefully they get my details right. Hopefully I look like me and not like those figures you buy and they don't look anything like you. That would kind of stink. But yeah. So
they hand off your urn to like the 6-year-old. Yeah, we got no toys in the house here. Play with this.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, guys, there's some options out there after life, and we keep exploring them, and I'm going to keep trying to find some more. So guys, it's been a fun episode. Always a good hang. And like I said, we're going to keep this going. We'll probably keep putting out two for the next week or so, and then we're going to go back down to our Monday episodes. I'm sorry, you know, after Labor Day, things speed up a little bit. Maybe a little bit of return back to normal life. And I also got like a baby coming, so we got to make this a little bit manageable, a little bit more manageable for us. So, Mike, anything to promote before you get out of here?
I mean, I guess I'll just promote our buddy KP Burke with his podcast, the American Loser podcast. Him and his father every week puts out an episode going over the biggest losers in American history. It's a very informative deep dive and funny as hell. As they call it, it's NPR with F-bombs. If you want to help them out, listen to the podcast and rate them. They also have a Patreon that you can look up, and you can get exclusive episodes on that. So check them out, the American Loser Podcast.
Yeah, I love KP. I love Larry Burke even more than KP. So it's a very good podcast. And I'll promote a couple of weeks ago, we had the Nappy Roots on. One of my favorite episodes of the year. Really love those guys. They make some great hip-hop. They got a new album coming out called 40, but it's the number 40 with R-T-Y, so 40, and that's coming out on September 25th. They made a lot of big hits over the years. They're really cool guys. They're into craft beer. They got a really cool Instagram to follow, so go check out the Nappy Roots. Guys,
Skinny still hasn't invited me over, by the way.
Yeah, he probably moved. He's probably not, and you probably uprooted him from his hometown that they rap about. For the last four albums, he's probably like,
He's like, you know what? We're Atlanta, Kentucky. I'm going back to Kentucky.
Yeah, the next album is going to be from Portland, as far away as they could get from you. But that's it, guys. Another cool hang, another great episode. I want to thank Suze for coming on. What you can do for us, if you're enjoying this, please follow us on the socials. Just look up Verbal Shenanigans. Follow us on there, and then I'll check out the iTunes, Stitcher, and a bunch of internet radio stations. One of them comes to mind is the RTF Sports Network. They've been doing a great job with us. The BS Podcast Network, Denville Radio, Discover County Network. And that's it, guys. Other than that, life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
Have a peachy night.